Jeffrey Archer is back. Short stories this time. One of the world's biggest selling authors, 300 million sales and counting. Former Conservative MP, member of the House of Lords, controversial with a stint in jail, of course, to add to the colour of what has been an amazing life. Jeffrey Archer back with us. Good morning.
Good morning, mate.
Are the bells pealing throughout the land given the royal engagement announcement this morning?
Yes, they're bound to be. What an attractive couple they are. Yes.
Indeed.
They probably are in the United States as well.
Yeah, they probably are as well. Tell me, since we last talked, which was a number of years ago, I didn't realise it's been 10 years since you've done a short story. What's been the gap about?
In between, I wrote 7 books called The Clifton Chronicles, the story of a man called Harry Clifton, born in the back streets of Bristol, and there are 7 of them, and that took me 7 years, and I couldn't break that sequence up, Mike, because it was a story that literally started just after the Second World War and took me right through to nearly the present day. So I wasn't able to do a set of short stories while the Clifton Chronicles were being written.
So while you're doing that, and when you do your short stories, what's the difference in terms of, I don't know, the intellectual discipline, if you like? If you've got all day and all the volumes in the world versus condensing it down into something clever, short, sharp and brilliant?
Well, you're very right. They couldn't be more different, because the Clifton Chronicles were roughly 120,000 words each. And so at best, even when I was reading through the final draft, I couldn't do more than, say, 60 or 70 pages a day of very slow reading. Whereas with a short story, you can do the beginning, the middle and the end in probably 30 pages, 20, 30, 40 maximum pages, and you can do that in a day. Mm. So you can read the whole story in a day, and that gives you it's a very different thing from a full-length novel, where probably the last reading of This Was a Man, the final book in the Clifton Chronicles, probably was 4 or 5 days.
I take it you need to write. This is what this is all about.
I have to. Yeah, I can't stop. I know what the next 3 books are. My head is down the whole time. My brain is continually throbbing with ideas. No, I write because I want to write. Naturally, one's flattered by how many millions of people buy the books. Of course one is. And that may be an aspect of what keeps me going, but at the moment I can't stop.
It's good. It must be good for you. I looked you up. Given I said it's been a couple of years since we talked, I looked you up. You haven't aged a day, and so I'm assuming this has all got you keep the mind active and you're well.
Well, I was in the gym this morning for an hour. I take that seriously. I walked to my lunch, which was about 15 minutes and 15 minutes back. At 77, I'm very conscious that you've got to stay fit, very aware of that. And as a writer doing 2-hour slots, 6 to 8, 10 to 12, 2 to 4, 6 to 8, you've got to be able to concentrate for 2 hours. If the concentration goes, then it's a complete waste of time.
It must be a discipline, because you're sitting there at home in your beautiful penthouse and you must think, oh, no, I'll skip the next 2 hours, lovely cup of coffee and a sandwich, or I'll look at the view, or I'll watch some television.
Yes, that's very tempting. But, of course, for first drafts, I go away to my home in Mallorca and I don't allow that to happen. It is totally disciplined. Rise at 5:30. Do the first session between 6 and 8, breakfast. Do the second session, 10 until 12, lunch and a long walk. Third session, 2 until 4, break, another walk. Jeez. Final session, 6 until 8, in bed by 9:30, 10. And that goes on that'll go on for 35 days, about 300 hours, and then I'll have what I call the first draft.
How did that all come about, that discipline and that particular procedure?
I think from my athletics days. I think from when I was attempting to get in the British team and run for my country, that demanded the same discipline. I suspect today athletes are far more disciplined and far better trained, because, of course, we were all amateurs. Mm. But we did realize that you couldn't just pop out on the track and hope to do a good time. You had to do the work.
So whether it was athletics or politics or writing, then you're one of those people who needs to be disciplined and to chase some level of success.
Yes, I confess, people tease me, often saying, my God, Jeffrey, don't you stop being a competitor. You're 77 years old. And I say, no, I can't stop. I mean, and I suspect that may be the athletics.
Exactly.
That may have been from the days of wanting to win. That is carried on into the rest of my life. A sportsman I've known all my life. Don't lose that desire to win.
Yeah. What was your time? Was it not? It was 9 point something, wasn't it?
Well, I did the 100 yards.
Yeah.
You must remember that when I ran for England, it was the 100 yards, not the 100 metres.
Yeah.
So I did 9.6 for the 100 yards against the Canadians and against the Russians. But frankly, it wasn't good enough. There were three or four runners in Britain at the time who were doing 9.4, 9.5.
Jeez. But having said that, you know, a Caucasian bloke, and if you look at who runs the 100 these days, there are not many white people at that sort of speed, are there?
No, that's the difference between the amateurs and the professionals. In our days, pretty well had to go to university and be out of existence for 3 years to be able to do that amount of running and that amount of sport. Nowadays, they're professionally paid and can do it all day, so they're in the gym, bulking themselves up. They're then doing their training. That was not possible. But the other side of that coin, of course, is if I was 23 today, I wouldn't have a chance of getting in the British team.
Now, the colour in your life, Geoffrey, I mean, do you reflect on that much? I mean, it's been a remarkable life, hasn't it?
Very privileged, and you're quite right, fascinating. And when I look back on it, I think how lucky I've been. And in so many ways, because I had had an amazing marriage, which has lasted 51 years, with an amazing woman who's now chairman of the Science Museum in Great Britain, and the Queen's made her a dame. So you're right, I've had a very privileged and very fortunate life.
You speak very well of your wife and the head of that Science Museum. And I mean, she's out working, running Britain, for goodness sake. You two have never been more active.
Well, she's the one, funnily enough. It's interesting you say that. I seem to be going everywhere now as the guest of Dame Mary Archer. I went the other day to the opening of the Bloomberg building, and they put her between the Governor of the Bank of England and the Lord Mayor of London. And I thought, you know, you're the one. I'm just hanging about here.
Isn't that lovely? You must be thrilled at that.
I'm very proud of her.
So you should
very
be.
Very proud of her.
Now, can I ask about Brexit and how big a mess this is?
Well, it's interesting you're asking me at this split second, because I had lunch with a senior MP today, and he says the truth is we don't know what the agreement on Brexit is going to be. He is an optimist by nature, this particular MP, but he was optimistic that the final deal would be quite good, and his reasoning was simply that the Europeans need us as much as we need them, and they're not going to just get rid of us. That would not suit them at all.
So what we're seeing at the moment is shadow boxing.
Oh yes, and I haven't seen the final contract. You haven't seen the final contract. We're getting more discussions on Brexit from people who haven't got a blooming clue what's going on than any other subject I've ever known. But as my friend pointed out when we walked out of the restaurant, he said, "Look, stand here and see how many BMWs, Volkswagens, and Mercedes pass us in the next 2 minutes, and you'll see why the Germans don't want us to go."
So true. Is Theresa May in trouble?
No. No, the party has come behind her until the end of Brexit. They will not want a disruption before the end of Brexit, and that could be another 18 months, because it officially ends in September 2019. We're meant to have all the documents signed by then. I can't speak for what will happen then, because in politics, so much can change in a week.
Yeah. How do you explain Labour and their success in the election?
I think Jeremy Corbyn comes over as a man who truly believes all the things he says. I think the marks against him, such as his association with the IRA, there's an entire generation under the age of 40 who couldn't tell you what the IRA is. They don't remember the three-day week. They don't remember Labour Chancellor at 98% taxation. So they're giving him the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
And I understand that. There's an entire generation now who are willing to give him a chance.
So are the Conservatives in trouble when they next go to the polls, do you think?
Yes, they are. If we went to the polls next week, we would lose. We've got 2 to 3 years to try and do something about it. But Jeremy Corbyn, at this very moment, is drawing vast crowds up and down the country and is very popular.
Extraordinary, isn't it? Listen, Geoffrey, lovely to catch up with you. Have a very, very Merry Christmas and the best of luck with the book.
That's very kind, Mike, and thank you for having me on the show.
Always a pleasure. Geoffrey Archer out of London this morning.